Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer back with you alongside my co-host Brent Beard. It is a Thursday night. We are live on Ryer on YouTube. We appreciate each and every one of you checking in with us. It is a big football night, Brent Beard. We've got NFL football, Bucks and Falcons. We've got some college football. We got some late college football coming up here in just a little bit out in West Texas. So, plenty of football on a Thursday night, but we are here to preview the Varsity League, the Southeastern Conference, and looks like another slate, kind of limited in some ways in terms of the number of games, but as you pointed out before we went on the air, you got the multiple bye weeks in effect this season too.
Everybody gets two. Now, if you play in week zero like Florida State did, you get three. Unfortunately, Trav, Florida State had a bye week every week, it seems like.
Yeah, Florida State's been on the bye since the Orange Bowl last year.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is the case. But, look, with the playoffs and in the extended season, I think that's a good thing that everybody has some extra time. You and I, have, as long as we've done this, we've seen many a game where if a team had a bye week later in the year, it would have made a real difference in their season.
It would have, no doubt. And Chino doesn't have a bye week, our show mascot right there. Chino doesn't get any weeks off, right?
Listen, he was on the little porch here, just dead to the world for the last few hours. He hears your voice. He knows it's time to perform. So here he is.
That's why he makes the big bucks, Chino, here on Second Helping. And by the way, if you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel right here, we would appreciate you taking the time to do that right now. Hit that subscribe button. There's a notification bell you see right there. Hit that as well. That way you're alerted to all of our content as it drops here on the channel. And if you would hit us with a thumbs up, we would greatly appreciate that as well. Well, Brent, we're not going to waste any time on this Thursday night. We're going to get going right out the gate. Noon Eastern on ABC, the only top 25 matchup in the Southeastern Conference this week. Missouri travels to number 24, Texas A&M. A&M, a 2.5-point home favorite. From that perspective, Brent, this game feels a little bit like Texas A&M Notre Dame in the opener in College Station.
Yeah, the reality is A&M, to their credit, has really improved since then, haven't they, Travis?
Yes, they have.
That's the good thing. We have mentioned this a little bit, where the Texas A&M defensive line really had their way with Arkansas, forced Taylen Green into some bad turnovers. So we'll Trav, I'll start there. Can they do the same thing with Missouri and Brady Cook? We'll have a great outcome on how this game comes out.
Missouri coming off a very close shave last time out against the Vanderbilt Commodores, a game when we'll talk about this with Vanderbilt in Alabama coming up in just a little bit. If anything, I walked away thinking, boy, Vanderbilt really let one get away there. Had opportunity to win that game in Como, but as good teams typically do when they're not at their best, and especially on their home field, they take care of business. So, you know, I think the difference, though, between Arkansas and Missouri is trust in the quarterback position for the opponent that A&M is going to see this week. I've got a lot more trust in Brady Cook than I do Taylen Green. Taylen Green is hella fun to watch. I've said that for weeks now.
He is.
I mean, he is appointment viewing a lot of times, but boy, you just always wonder if the catastrophic mistake or two isn't coming from him. I don't worry about that as much. With Brady Cook, I'll be interested to see Nate Noel, who went for nearly 200 yards on the ground against Vanderbilt for Missouri. Can he have similar type of success against a defense that really didn't give that up to Arkansas last week?
Oh, yeah, no question. I also want to give Le'Veon Moss, the running back at A&M, some credit, 217 yards. Their running game is revving up a little bit too. Now, we're trying to have some fun on this, and I don't know if this is fun or just absolute lunacy, but Marcel Reed is the
quarterback
at A&M. And if people haven't heard this, I know you have. Marcel Reed. Now, Connor Wiegman may be ready to play, but I don't know if they're going to replace him. That's going to be one of the real interesting storylines of this game. But, Trav, the reality is Marcel Reed, the A&M quarterback, actually has a sister that works on the football staff at Missouri. So Eli Drinkwith, and either his infinite wisdom or paranoia, has not allowed Marcel Reed's sister to be on the field to watch practice. So,
you know, and I believe she's an assistant in on-campus recruiting, which now I guess during the practice week, you could have, you know, prospects that come in that want to go out to practice. But yeah, that seems to be stretching it a little bit for Eli. And maybe it is. Maybe it's a little paranoia, especially after that close win over the Vanderbilt Commodores. But, you know, I think we all know it's going to come down to a lot more than that. And so when I look at this matchup, though, I anticipate this being a game that really goes deep into the fourth quarter. Can A&M, you know, kind of extend that success from Arkansas and beat a top 10 team in year one under Mike Elko? Had that opportunity in the opener. Here it is, similar to me in terms of matchup with Missouri this time around, but there is a difference at the quarterback position. I'd be surprised if Marcel Reed really wasn't the guy moving forward. My biggest concern with Marcel Reed, like kind of like Michael Hawkins Jr. of Oklahoma too, is that these aren't the biggest guys in the world.
Right.
You know, and they put it on the line. You know, you saw it with Michael Hawkins against Auburn again last week. This guy just throws his body all around. It's a long football season. I mean, I have concerns for guys like Jalen Milroe from that standpoint. He's 6'3", 220 pounds.
Absolutely.
So some of these guys aren't the biggest guys. So, yeah, I think, though, ultimately Noel on the ground for Missouri, Moss in the running game for A&M, kind of I think that'll probably go a long way in telling the tale. But I like the veteran quarterback on the road in this situation too, and Brady Cook.
And I'll put my addendum to this for my last comment. Trav, is this the kind of game that a Luther Burden really steps up and could be the difference in making some key first downs in the fourth quarter? Now Burden has, I don't know if he's been bored or what it is. Now, it's not saying that he is not talented and hadn't had a good year, but I think they wanted a little more consistency out of a guy like that. And I'm just wondering if Missouri's offense coordinator and Kirby Moore will be looking for him repeatedly in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and the luxury for Missouri is that you got another guy in Theo Wiggins. And somewhere else where Luther Burden can impact games is in the return game.
No question.
Keep that in mind, too, for this game when you're thinking about close games and things that could decide it ultimately down the stretch. Let's keep it within the Southeastern Conference, of course, but let's move into that 3:30 Eastern window, Brent. Ole Miss in rebound mode following the bitterly disappointing home defeat at the hands of the Kentucky Wildcats. Got to go to Cola to take on a South Carolina team that in some ways, and I'm thinking more about the defensive front, the line of scrimmage on defense, is set up similar to Kentucky in that it may be able to slow down the Rebels just enough. And you've got to wonder how much. It's early in the season. You should have plenty in the tank still, but Ole Miss used a lot last Saturday in that loss to Kentucky. Sure did.
Yeah, I agree with that. And look, the thing that you and I have hung our hat on ever since we've been working together in the early 90s is that line of scrimmage and who can block who. And my question is that offensive line of Ole Miss against Kyle Kennard and Dylan Stewart, who have basically had their way with everybody up to this point.
They have. And, you know, you think about the running game in this game too, because Rocket Sanders is going to have a lot on him from the South Carolina perspective. I don't know about you. I don't see a big difference whether it's Lenora Sellers or Robbie Ashford at the quarterback position.
I don't either.
Mostly because regardless, they're going to be utilized in much the same way. with the way this offense is. I'll say this. It's antiquated, I guess you could say, this offensive approach, but it fits who they've got. You know, they don't have a Spencer Rattler around anymore. They don't have a Todd Ellis from 100 years ago. So what they're doing offensively, especially with Rocket Sanders and also helping that defense in the process, I think it'll be a tight game. I think Ole Miss, favored by 9, there's some big numbered road dogs in the SEC this weekend. Ole Miss is one of those at minus 9. I think it'll be around there, 7 to 10 points ultimately. I'm going to stick with Jackson Dart. I'm going to stick with that Ole Miss offense, and I think they're going to be a little too balanced ultimately for South Carolina to be able to knock off.
And listen, have we given Trey Harris his due?
Monster.
Now Dart needs to, and I'm sure he's tried, is to have some balance in that passing game. But you know who he's going to early and often, and particularly if this thing is pretty hairy at some point later on in the game. Does South Carolina remind you a little bit of Oklahoma?
There's a couple of teams that remind me of Oklahoma in the Southeastern Conference right now. And, yeah, I think South Carolina would be one of those. I think Kentucky kind of reminds me of Oklahoma. A little bit. Defensive identity, quarterback that can do some things with his legs. You don't question the heart of Brock Vandegrift. Similar to you already don't question the heart of Michael Hawkins Jr.
Really?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of teams like that in the Southeastern Conference this season.
Yeah, absolutely. So, this is one of those, Trav, to me, now Alabama, Georgia is the epitome of this conference, but the last two games that we've talked about here, to me, is the strength of this league. And that's the middle part of it. But people can say, well, the SEC is top heavy. Well, maybe they have been in the past, but I still say, The teams we've just talked about, A&M in Missouri, Ole Miss in South Carolina, travel on a given Saturday, they can beat anybody outside this conference.
And a couple of teams here playing for a couple different things. I mean, Ole Miss, you're playing for your college football playoff lives.
Sure you are.
Because that's already in peril. After a home loss to an unranked Kentucky team, you lose this one, it's over. I mean, I don't you still got Georgia down the road, even though that game's in Oxford. Even if you're a two-loss team, if you lose this game, somehow you go on from this one and win out.
Right.
It's still going to be hard with South Carolina and Kentucky losses on your resume as a two-loss team, I would think, because there's going to probably be multiple two-loss teams from within the Southeastern Conference whose resumes are going to ultimately, potentially anyway, look better than Ole Miss. And South Carolina Shane Beamer, you're trying to get to a bowl. You're trying to be bowl eligible at this point, and you're in a pretty good spot right now. If you could get this one on Saturday, you really, really enhance that portfolio moving forward. 3:30 ABC on Saturday afternoon from Athens, Georgia. Speaking of teams and how they've sort of been able to package a loss, boy, Georgia's been able to put a nice bow on that loss on the road at Alabama. It seems like you listen to national talking heads and people like that, analysts, and it's, wow, couldn't be more impressed with Georgia. Georgia lost the game to Alabama, but I will say this. I give Kirby Smart for doing what he needed to do. I think the approach he took, the positivity and the pride that he spoke of when talking about his team and that incredible comeback in the second half in Tuscaloosa, that's masterful to me, because he understands everything is still very much in front of his team. It just needs to get into the college football playoff. And so in some ways it kind of reminded me of Tim Tebow in 2009 after the Gators lost to Ole Miss at home. And, you know, the infamous or famous Tebow speech, depending on how you viewed it, I guess. That's kind of the vibe I got from Kirby. But what do you think? Auburn, boy, that situation's tough. We talked about this on the show earlier in the week. If you just looked at the box score for Auburn, Oklahoma. Auburn won this game by double digits.
Really?
Like the turnover bug, and it was just one turnover. But, man, when you give up a takeaway or a turnover for a non-offensive touchdown in close games, I got to think the analytics on that in terms of win-loss isn't going to be very good in your favor.
No. And listen, some folks have tracked the history of Hugh Freeze and number of seasons with 20-plus turnovers as a head coach. Hugh Freeze has had 8 of them. Nick Saban had 1. Ryan Day had 0. Kirby's had 0. Kalen DeBoer's had 2 in his history. So the 2 of the stats have really stuck out to me. One would be that one on turnovers for Hugh Freeze. And Trav, the other one is winning on the road. Auburn has not won in Athens since 2005.
And they're not going to do that Saturday. No. And those are great numbers. I'll give you a couple more that kind of fortify those too. Auburn right now, through 5 games, has more plays of 40 yards or more than any offense in the conference.
That's incredible.
They have 12 plays of 40 yards or more. Auburn is also dead last in turnover margin at -2. They're -2. They're starting games -2 in turnovers. And again, it's not so much that they had a turnover against Oklahoma. It was just absolutely catastrophic in that situation. Yeah. And also, you know, what Auburn doesn't do enough of, Auburn doesn't take the ball away enough.
No,
so
they really don't.
You know, when you're in that kind of situation, it's going to be tough. I think for Auburn, if you're Auburn this week, you're thinking, okay, we watched the Alabama tape. Do we have some of those sort of concepts and personnel choices that maybe Alabama has? Now, you don't have Jalen Milroe at quarterback, but Peyton Thorne can do some things with his legs. You certainly have a capable running back or two, Jarquez Hunter. I don't think your offensive line, though. Maybe the biggest thing for Auburn in trying to make that sort of analogy or run those parallels to Alabama offensively, it might be more up front where Auburn doesn't have it.
Yeah, agreed. And look, some quick things about Georgia. They won't have Small Munden. They're outstanding linebackers, so that hurts them. But again, I give Kirby and Georgia credit. I know you chronicled this on your work that, look, they made adjustments in that second half from that, what was basically that 12-minute mark of the second quarter to the final Williams score. Bama struggled to get the end zone at that point. Now, they had a lot of touchdowns before then, but what that tells you is that they made adjustments. Malachi Starks, 8 tackles, 2 for loss. Dan Jackson had a pick. And Carson Beck, to his credit, kind of got things together too. But to kind of balance that out, the stat that we talked about earlier in the week that I'll mention briefly, again, Trav, Georgia in the last 3 games, Tennessee Tech, Kentucky, and Alabama, has missed 40 tackles. That is very un-Kirby-like with that. So would you say they had a little practice in tackling this week?
Well, I think Ryan Williams, just on his – touchdown, the winning touchdown, forced about 3
his
tackles just on that one. And certainly Jalen Milroe was very difficult to tackle. Rhythmless One here viewing live, and we appreciate you checking in via the show chat. Rhythmless, I can speak to that. Rhythmless, he says, or she says, Auburn is gonna have a bad day against Georgia. I feel like Georgia will lose another one this season, but it won't be this Saturday. Yeah, I don't see it being this Saturday either for the Georgia Bulldogs. So let's keep it moving, Brent. A little bit later, you've got at 4:15 Eastern time on the SEC Network, Alabama in Nashville to take on the Vanderbilt Commodores. Vandy coming off a bye week. Alabama, of course, coming off the big, big win over the Georgia Bulldogs in Tuscaloosa. I'm going to do this matchup this way. I'm going to give 3 predictions for this game, and then you kind of tell me where you think I'm going, or if I'm right, wrong.
Yeah.
But my my first prediction for Saturday in Nashville is that Alabama will not rush for 496 yards and six touchdowns in the game, because the last time Alabama went to Vanderbilt, remember that, 2017?
I do.
59-0 win. Alabama ran for 496 and six, had three or four running backs. I mean, that was Damian Harris. Yeah. That was Josh Jacobs. That was Najee Harris. Brian Robinson was a young back that got some run. You think about the running backs on some of those Alabama teams, but they combined for that massive total. You know, so I don't think that's going to happen, but kind of the concern I have for Vanderbilt defensively in this game is that the last time out, as we talked about earlier, Nate Noel, the Missouri running back, gashed Vanderbilt throughout that game. And it wasn't anything fancy in watching it. It was zone runs, just give it to him. And Missouri's offensive line went to work against that Vanderbilt front seven. So you know what there's been in the wake of last Saturday night in Tuscaloosa, because it was such a quarterback-centric game with Jalen Milroe, I've heard from some Alabama fans, they're not happy. They want more touches for Justice Haynes. And also, to me, it shouldn't matter. If you run for nearly 180 like Alabama did against that Georgia defense, I don't care who's running it.
Absolutely not.
As long as you run for 180.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's some Alabama fans. They want more Justice Haynes. They want more Jam Miller. So I think you're going to get that this week after seeing what Nate Noel did to this Vanderbilt defense the last time out.
Yeah, and look, it's a long season, and I think they'll be able to do that too. And the stat, back up what you were saying, the stat that really stuck out to me with this offensive line did not allow a sack against Georgia. I mean, that tells you so much that they have – I'm not saying they've solved everything. I'm just saying they've been able to get the pieces of the puzzle in the right place, and they have played well. Look, you and I have talked about this for years, and we've labeled this a character game. And what we mean by that is you have a big win. You're number one. Everybody is telling you how great they are. Now, this is one of the real things that Nick Saban was able to do and keep this team focused after big wins. And it's going to be very interesting to see the same here against Vanderbilt in front of, I believe the stadium, when I heard this week, seats roughly now about 35,000 because of the construction.
Yeah.
And Trav, how many of those would be Alabama fans? 28 to 30?
Yeah.
Probably.
Easy. The Vanderbilt ticket, man, I mean, it's a good week.
It is,
with that limited capacity and all those Alabama fans that are absolutely going to be looking to take it over. But yeah, I think maturity is going to be a big thing you're looking for from this Alabama team. There has been so much of an aftermath from the Georgia win, because it wasn't just a win. It was one of the more amazing games, one of the more memorable games. So people can't help but continue to talk about it.
Right.
And there doesn't seem to be this sense around the Alabama program under Kalen DeBoer of 24-hour rule. It's done. It's over.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of had carry throughout the week. Now, does that mean there's more than one way that you can do it? Absolutely you can. And so that will be interesting to see from the Alabama perspective, because Vanderbilt rested ready after that disappointing double overtime loss at Missouri a couple Saturdays ago. And that leads me into my second prediction for this Alabama-Vanderbilt game, Brent. Vanderbilt will not score 27 points in the second half on Saturday. That's what we saw from Georgia last Saturday in Tuscaloosa. And, hey, there's no bigger fan of Diego Pavia than me, okay?
Yes.
I've been talking about this guy going back to the offseason with the potential of him becoming the Vanderbilt quarterback. It's played out that way. So I understand this isn't Kyle Shurmur at quarterback for Vandy on Saturday.
Yeah,
it's
really
a different deal with Diego. And I'll say this about Vandy too. I like what offensive coordinator Tim Beck has done with Diego. And it makes sense because he came over with Pavia. So there's a lot of comfort. There's a lot of familiarity with those two, and it shows. There's a lot to defend that Vanderbilt throws at you. full house backfields, triple option in the red zone. Mm-hmm. They'll spread you out, mm-hmm. run Diego, unbalanced line looks, screen game, both perimeter and to the back. So you better bring the preparation this week. And this is understanding the comparisons to Johnny Manziel, those things. Even Diego yeah. has talked about that. I don't see that exactly. Maybe the biggest reason why I don't is because Diego doesn't have a Mike Evans on the outside yeah, like right. Johnny Football had.
Yes.
So
yes.
the point being, it's going to take more than Diego. He's going to have, you know, Cedric Alexander, the running back. Some of these guys are going to have to step up and really help their guy.
Let's carry that out a little further. I'm curious on the other side. What does Womack do, Trav, to limit Diego? I mean, look, this guy's going to get his yards. I'm not saying he'll get 100 yards rushing. I can see him getting 50 or 75 and extending some drives along that way. Do they put a spy on him the whole time? Do they just make sure everybody else is covered and know that within a certain zone that they can kind of keep him in that? I'll be very interested to know as far as what they try to do to limit him and from taking this to a third to fourth quarter game somehow.
Yeah, I think that initially you come out and you're just going to be you on defense.
Yeah.
And you had that luxury because you have linebackers like Deontay Lawson, but probably even more importantly this week, a guy like Jahad Campbell.
Yes.
That can
yes.
really run and help you against a guy like this. Mm-hmm. Thing about Diego too is it's not just elusiveness and it's not really speed. This guy's an ex high school wrestler.
Yeah.
So he's hard to tackle. You'll watch him on a weekly basis. You don't think he's going to shake people physically and he slings people. So you've got to square this guy up and get him on the field. I think personnel wise, Alabama has the benefit of that starting with the linebackers.
Right.
But also, as I alluded to earlier, there's not a true big time wide receiver on this Vanderbilt roster. There were a couple a year ago, but one transferred to Georgia, one transferred to Colorado. So, you know, you can probably, even with everything you gave up and the explosive plays at Georgia last week, you can probably man up against these receivers. Mm-hmm. And if you want to bring a Malachi Moore into the mix or Keon Saab from the safety position, you know, you can probably do more of that. But look, I'm far more excited about this game because of Diego Pavia
no question.
than I would be otherwise. I think Alabama's going to win the game comfortably. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to be by the 23 or more, but Diego's going to keep that thing interesting. And I'll say this for him too. He hadn't turned the ball over a whole lot this season.
True.
Hadn't thrown an interception yet. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if Alabama can continue that takeaway train from the Georgia game where they took it away four times from the visiting Bulldogs. My final and third prediction for Alabama Vanderbilt, Brent, for the fifth time this season, in other words, 5 for 5, Jalen Milroe will account for 4 or more touchdowns. He's done it in every game to date. And I know you could kind of think about it as, well, you know, it was Western Kentucky. Well, it was South Florida. You know, well, even with it being Wisconsin. But he made Georgia defensively for a lot of that game last Saturday night look like those other teams, which was the most astounding aspect of the whole night for me. You know, he had 12 rushing touchdowns, Brent, in 14 games last season.
Yeah.
He already has 8 in 4 games this season. Tommy Rees! What were you doing, man? Really? What were you doing last year?
It wasn't enough. Now, to your point of what Diego doesn't have around him, Jalen Milroe does have that around him.
Exactly.
As far as receivers and running backs. And again, this improved considerably offensive line. Look, I like all three of your points, and I would say certainly all three of those I think they're apt to happen. I don't think we'll have a 59-0 or anything like that. But I'm with you. I mean, we could see a 35-7 or 14 or something of that nature. I don't know if Bama fans would be happy with that, but or a road win on the conference in this conference is all that matters.
It is. I do think Alabama is somehow, some way going to probably get into the 40s in scoring in this game. And you also got to take into account special teams too, because Missouri hurt Vandy with the punt return game a couple of Saturdays ago. Right. It's interesting for Alabama because there's been Cole Adams back there. We've seen Ryan Williams, the prodigy back there, return some punts as well. So, you know, that's another area where he can be a big factor in this game as well, if he's the choice back there. But, you know, Vanderbilt's kicker, Brock Taylor, he got off to a really good start this season. Mm-hmm. He missed a 50-yarder with about 3 minutes to go in regulation at Missouri that would have given Vanderbilt the lead there. Right. And then he missed the one to extend it in the second overtime from 31 yards out. So you wonder about the psyche, although, again, I'm not guessing it's going to come down to the kickers on Saturday in Nashville. Hey, let's get into primetime. As number 4 Tennessee travels to Fayetteville to take on the Arkansas Razorbacks. Tennessee, kind of like Oklahoma, you know, 13.5 point favorite, has a little bit of that feel to it too, going on the road, kind of a weird trip whenever you go to Fayetteville, especially when you don't do it on an every other year basis.
Right.
It hasn't been a place that's been exceptionally kind to Tennessee, I don't think, throughout the years either.
No, I agree with that. A couple of things for Tennessee, 78-3 in the first quarter. You're talking about getting off to a good start. Tennessee and Ohio State, the only teams in Division I are in the top five in scoring offense and scoring defense. So, and this Tennessee defense is for real, and people need to see that. There are two things here for me with Arkansas. One is, and we talked about Auburn with this, Arkansas is among the 20 worst Division I teams in turnovers. Mm-hmm. They've already lost 9 on the season. And Trey, my question to you, and we've kind of touched on this from time to time, if as maddening as he is, if Taylen Green actually, and I know that's kind of makes him as exciting as he is, but if he played a little bit more with it himself and didn't create some of these turnovers, how good could he be in a game like this?
Well, and that's why I think this, unfortunately, is a tipping point game probably for Arkansas.
It could very well be.
Against this Tennessee defense, I could see Taylen Green turning it over 3 or 4 times.
Right.
And extra possessions of any kind aren't good against Tennessee because offensively they don't really need them. But then you start giving them those with the potential of them also setting Tennessee up in favorable scoring position. Mm-hmm. I don't like this game for Arkansas. I'm scared for Arkansas. I think more so than Oklahoma, this could be the kind of statement outcome where it's, you know, 42-17, something like that, where Tennessee goes in there and just takes the Hogs apart. So that's where it all goes back to for me. Mm-hmm. Taylen Green, he scares the hell out of me. You know, going back to that Oklahoma State game, I watched every play of that game and no skin in it, you know, just observing the game. And just an observer, you still find yourself yelling at the television watching Taylen Green play quarterback.
Yeah, really.
You know, there's been years where against Tennessee, you can kind of be that guy and it not come back to hurt you or harm you. But I think with this Tennessee defense, this isn't the year for it. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he plays out of his mind and steers clear of, you know, the turnovers and, you know, they get enough balance because they didn't get enough out of their run game last week.
Absolutely not.
Against Texas A&M. And I don't have much reason to think that's going to be that much different against this Tennessee front seven on Saturday night. So I'm not telling you what to do with your money. I'm just saying Tennessee big Saturday night.
Yeah, I agree totally with that.
Kind of the way I'm going with that one. Let's wrap it up on Saturday night. UCF, Gus Malzahn going to Gainesville after taking a tap from Prime in Orlando last Saturday. Wow, big favorite UCF was against CU. And the Buffs went down there and hammered Gus and the Knights. So now it's on to Florida. You know, you didn't used to think of, well, we'll lose at home to Colorado, but we can get well on the road in Gainesville.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where we're at. I think this is going to be a fun game in terms of it being competitive. Mm-hmm. I could see it going either way. KJ Jefferson, obviously, with his familiarity, he's played against Florida, I think, in the past. So I really don't know which way to go with this one, Brent. And, you know, Florida should be regrouped, recovered, should have a little bit of confidence after thumping a bad Mississippi State team on the road last time out. Other than that, I don't really have a great feel for this one.
No, I agree with that. By the way, our SEC friend, KJ Jefferson, is a quarterback for UCF. Trev, I couldn't help but laugh at this. You'll appreciate it. He's listed, and I've got this in my notes, is 247. Trev, what I was told today is he is a cheeseburger away from 265.
Yeah, so, I think I heard Billy Napier this week kind of describe KJ as 261-ish or something like that.
Yeah. So, but look, my thing with this is Florida's tackle rate, third worst in the SEC, just ahead of Arkansas, Mississippi State. That's not a good the way UCF wants to run the ball. Those two don't really meet. Too many penalties also for Florida. You do kind of wonder though. Gus has got a little bit of similarity to Mario Cristobal with him, that he can pull one out of the hat every now and then, and it goes the wrong way. But certainly, if you're the Gators, you can't rely on that. Look, Trav, here's the reality, and we both know Gator fans. They're a little calmer. They've had a week off. Maybe a little bit of confidence. But, Trav, you and I both know if UCF runs for 300, and that thing's akin to Miami and A&M, and that result, it won't take long for the temperature to go up again in Gainesville, will it?
Yeah, I get the sense that even if the Gators lose this one Saturday night, the head coach is the interim. You know, we talked about that previous weeks.
Agreed.
Billy Napier, to this point of his tenure, has felt like an interim for the entirety of his tenure. It's felt like he's been an interim, even though he's been the permanent guy. I think that, you know, with UCF and Gus, I mean, that's where it goes back to running the football. But I think Florida gets it done at home. I know Gus kind of burned his stinker. You know, Gus throughout the years, regardless of where he's been, he's had one or two a year that were just bombs.
Oh, yeah.
And absolutely. That was last week against CU. I think they'll match up better, probably, believe it or not, with Florida than they did Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Graham Mertz is kind of lost in everything. Is Graham Mertz, when he's been healthy, has played at a pretty damn high level.
He really has.
Now, Trey Wilson sounds like he's returned to practice, but. Yeah. Yes. The Florida wide receiver, we still don't know for sure if he's going to play Saturday night.
No, I agree. That is still up in the air. But and look, I'm not projecting anything with them. But I mean, if they could win this game, and say they could beat, obviously they probably right now will beat Florida State. I mean, that'd be a couple more wins. You know, if they get into to one of these 50-50 things with Kentucky right now, I'd take Kentucky if they met. You know, they could get near six wins. So, but I'm not going to get frisky and predict anything beyond this game for them right now, Trav.
Yeah, that's tough to do with Florida right now. But Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what Gus does. He has a stinker to a season, but then he'll beat somebody he's not supposed to beat. I mean, he beat Nick Saban, I think, four times as Auburn head coach. And he still had so many stinkers, even those wins couldn't keep him at Auburn much longer. So there you go. That is this weekend slate in the Southeastern Conference, a limited slate. Once again, we got the multiple bye weeks this year on the schedule. So it's going to be fun. Start at noon with Missouri and Texas A&M. Move through that mid-afternoon schedule there. You got three games that you'll certainly be keeping an eye on. And then in primetime with fourth-ranked Tennessee taking it on the road to Arkansas and UCF at Florida. Brent, anything else before we get out of here?
Yeah, let me go out of conference a minute with the ACC, FSU and Clemson, DJ Uiagalelei. Broken finger from what we hear. Brock Glenn is playing. He needs to be playing anyway and should have been playing two or three games ago, frankly. So my question as we end for you are these. If Dabo has a chance to put half a hundred on FSU Trav, will he hesitate to do that? And my second question is, will we all need a nap before that Miami at Cal game on 10:30 Eastern time on Saturday night?
What about College Game Day and Nick going on at 6 a.m. local time for Berkeley?
Oh, yeah.
On Saturday. Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
It's probably a good thing that won't be smell-o-vision because there'll be some stuff in the air out there in Berkeley.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's a bad thing, but it's a crazy weekend when you've got game day out at Berkeley, but I'll be up because Miami's shown that they can wobble a little bit.
You can.
And that's a hell of a trip going out there. So we'll see
how it goes. Hey,
David Dalrymple checking in here in the chat says he always enjoys the show. Thank you, Double D.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. And again, if you haven't subscribed to our channel, we certainly hope you'll take the time right now. Hit that subscribe button. There's a notification bell right there. You can hit that. That way you're alerted to our content as it drops here on the channel. And a thumbs up is always greatly appreciated as well. Brent, a lot of fun as always. Look forward to doing it again early next week.
Me too, bud. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games. And the greatest thing I can tell you right now is we've got 50-something straight days of college football, pro football, and some days we get both.
Yeah, it's nuts, the stretch we're about to enter here, or we're entering.
Max, right?
Yeah, Tex Titer says later, Chino. Tex Titer sending his regards.
Thank you.
For the show mascot, wonderfully talented Chino. So for Brent Beard, Travis Schreier, thanking you once again for joining us right here on Second Helping. And until next time, so long, everybody.